October 15, 2020, it's the Watch from Pedro Show. Watt from Pedro Show. We started the show with, well, I should say Happy Wednesday, middle of the month. Epistrophe, not the whole thing. The recording is incomplete. Carnegie Hall, 1957, year I was born. John Coltrane with, by request from my guest, Thelonious Monk. And then following that, The Human Hearts was Still in Air, which is the band led by my guest for today, Franklin Bruno. Welcome aboard.
Hey, great to be here.
You're all loud compared to
the show. Okay, all right, sorry. I'm turning down a little bit. Thanks for playing that. I asked you to play some Monk because, like, the way that Train is your guy, Monk is kind of my guy because probably because I played piano for a long time before I even picked up a guitar. So those tunes, some things like Epistrophe and Well You Needn't, and are things that I've been playing or trying to play or messing with or trying to understand since high school. I want to hear some of that.
You probably know this, but 9 months that John Coltrane played with him were very important.
Yeah, it was like right after Miles like fired him temporarily, and
the way I understand it, I mean, there's a Quincy Troupe version that Miles talks about. But yeah, Monk is actually backstage after a set where I guess John Coltrane nodded.
Mm-hmm.
Miles socked him.
Mm-hmm.
And Monk said, "Miles, you shouldn't have done that. John, you want to come play with me?" And in those 9 months, the first thing he did was get off the shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that house in 33rd Street in Philadelphia, cold turkey, 2 weeks, and does 9 months, and then goes back with Miles, right? They do a Europe tour, and then after that he goes on to his other band. But he was always grateful musically to Miles, very much. No bad words, John Coltrane. But he said he learned a lot of stuff from Monk, too. One interesting thing in that Augusta Bloom interview, maybe a year after. Yeah, what was it like? You know, did you watch him dance? Well, you know, that was the time when I would solo, right? So I never got to see him dance. But one interesting thing he said, they would place a song in a minor, and no one had ever hit the third. It's kind of implied, right?
Well, that's kind of funny, because there's this thing that goes around, I've seen it a couple of times, Herbie Hancock talks about being bored with the way he was playing himself when he was playing with Miles and being kind of frustrated. And Miles telling him at one point, hey, don't play the butter notes. And he didn't explain what he meant. But what Herbie Hancock decided he meant was that, like, the third and the seventh were too easy because they identify the chord. So he started avoiding the third and the seventh. And Herbie Hancock says that, like, this transformed his playing and freed him up. And he doesn't know if that's really what Miles meant. But it's kind of the same thing. Like, if you don't play the third, then... is it a major? Is it a minor? We don't know. You have a little bit more, space.
That's what I was going to say. It kind of takes away the ambiguity if you plant those intervals. Anyway, we're getting probably a little intellectual about something.
Start on a technical note.
Let's go back though. Let's go back before you knew how to talk, Brother Franklin. Your earliest musical recollection, please.
Right. Well, I guess I would say I'm not totally sure, but probably two things. First of all, I grew up out in the Inland Empire in like Upland, Claremont. Both sides of my family are Italian American, and big extended family. We had a lot of big parties. Whenever someone had a major anniversary or birthday or Saints Day, you know, like sometimes 30, 40 people would get together at someone's house or a hall and weddings and all these things. Anyway, the point is very often live band, at these things, like just playing, you know, maybe, swing standards, or I remember a band that would be at a lot of these parties playing like things like Bad Leroy Brown and Satin Doll and Ipanema. And Rolling on the River, for some reason, was like a big thing for like casual bands, as they call them, to play for those kind of gigs. So I remember those like from a very early age. So seeing some kind of live music. And I also had an uncle who would show up with a guitar, and sang like Bye Bye Blackbird and things like that. And also my dad always played piano, like since he was a kid, basically standards just from chord, like lead sheets, you know, or sheet from commercial sheet music, you know, Gershwin or Harry Warren or stuff like that. So I grew up with someone playing the piano in the house, and he also wrote songs, never professionally, never did anything with it. I think he had some ambitions like in the 50s, like when he was in college, but so the idea that someone would write their own music wasn't even weird to me. It wasn't something I had to discover, oh, somebody, you know, someone makes this stuff up, right? It was kind of in the house. So there was that. And he was not in any way, avant-garde or particularly adventurous in his taste, but he did teach me like basic chord formation on the piano. Like how, okay, here's how you start with any note. Here's how you make a major chord. Here's how you make a seventh chord. And that's what those letters, you know, above the melody mean. So I learned that stuff before I even transferred it to guitar or anything. So those were like the earliest musical, you know, things.
Jim Croce, Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah, I don't know why. There's like a few rock and roll songs that these bands that mostly played standards would play.
I wanted to tell you, D. Boone was way into that. When I met D. Boone, the only rock band he knew was Creedence. Mm. So your pup, he brought the piano on you. You just didn't jump on it. It was his idea?
I mean, I think they wanted me to have some lessons. They didn't care whether I took it super seriously. I really didn't. I think my dad and I had the same experience. We didn't gravitate towards playing classical music or learning, you know, refined technique in that sense. He has his own stories about like his childhood piano teacher, and he didn't care about playing this stuff. But when he learned how to play the pop songs of his day, then he got into it. My thing was more, you know, I learned a little bit. I took piano lessons. My dad didn't give me the lessons. There's like, you know, in our mall, there was one of those piano and organ stores. I don't think those exist anymore, but the malls always had like the Baldwin organ, you know, place. And there'd be a couple rooms in the back where you'd get piano lessons. I took those for a year and I learned basics of reading. But I didn't like it. You get these simplified versions of classical themes and it's not interesting and it's not cool either. And it's not rhythmically, you know, exciting. But anyway, I knew enough to get into the jazz band in high school and play piano from charts. And that was fun because like big band charts for the rhythm section are basically chord charts and you have some room, you know, you're playing the tune, but you're improvising the voicings and you're comping. That's another reason I love Monk because he's, it's like, okay, the solos are one thing, but you can always listen to what Monk is doing behind someone. And that's interesting. And it's not necessarily super technical. It's just like interesting and weird where he places the accents and how he's going to voice that chord. And so like I really liked that playing in a band with people. But that was really before I started writing songs or you know, picking up a guitar and singing in front of people.
What was the first album record you bought with your own money?
Probably a comedy record, probably like either a Steve Martin record or, I think I had like one of the Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, 2000-Year-Old Man, records, but the first, and some 7 inches, like I remember buying Kenny Rogers, The Gambler, on a 45 and yeah, for
but,
some
but
reason,
Franklin, that, I asked you for the first.
Okay. The first album.
A
this
record,
weird,
a record.
My life.
It could be a 45. Remember when 45s were at drugstores?
Oh yeah, that's probably where. I mean, it was either there or like a licorice pizza or something.
The licorice pizza I knew of was Catty Corner from the Whiskey. You know, what was the first gig you went and saw? I'm curious.
Well, again. So two categories, like with my parents, I saw Ella Fitzgerald once in high school.
That's a gig.
At the colleges. And I always remember her starting with this a Cole Porter song, It's All Right With Me. But then the first real show rock show I went to was Talking Heads before the it was the Stop Making Sense tour, but like the leg before that, before they started taping it. But it was basically that tour. And the thing with me, just like, if that seems like a strange thing for like your first concert. I'm an only child. I didn't have an older brother, and my parents are a little bit older. So there was no classic rock in the house. I went straight from like Monk and Gershwin to New Wave with no Styx and Journey or even Zeppelin or the Stones. All that stuff came later for me. I went straight from like the 40s to the 80s.
You know what my first gig was?
What?
It was T-Rex at 1973 at the Long Beach Auditorium. I want to play Flagpen.
Success is the measure of his wife's tits, and the measure of happiness It's decided by the size of your home. We used to have readers. We used to have thinkers. We used to have surfers and workers and bleeders. And now everything's a disease and a problem that nobody owns. The ignorant vitriol around the nation has replaced thoughtful, meaningful conversation and dialogue. Last time he got laughed at. It's become more important to be loud than smart. It's become
music. Oh, I feel it, moonlight blood, but you can feel it. We'll be right back.
I never knew there were so many Bohemians. And not just any pressed into the gallery that day. Surely not the average goers, they. Beautiful people aging under their beret. Young, not so young, from sidewalk cafes. Running like Washington's cultural monolith and leather jackets, hard punk makeup kids. Hats of all kinds, dark glasses and beads. Pink splattered pants worn at the knees. Overall sneakers and Mexican huaraches, jumpsuits, tweed coats, sweatshirts, and no bras. Camouflage jackets not allowed, bare feet, smoking pipes, even Sicilian possum teeth, a Rambo parade, so heady, I won't say I've known them all already. Last minute wardrobe, scarves in the breeze, lost cigarettes burned over wine and cheese. Art America came to see this exhibit of Modigliani. But who is wrapped in last in a last review? Sleeps on Independence Avenue. His biggest fear, the beepers and motorized street sweepers. At the door, I point to his head and ask the guard if he's dead. No, he says, not really. He sleeps on the grates, you see. Otherwise, his flesh may freeze. His belongings were rotten feathers, his bed, old pillows and rags, army blankets tethered with bags. I ask him if he was all right. He looked at me in fright. What do you feel in heart about these patrons of the arts? Oh, them? Let me tell you, boy. In his face I saw my eventuality, ears grown long, replacing sexuality, hair is spreading, sprouting from the nose, escaping like nature's terribly brushed painting. Rembrandt wrinkled and wild, he growled. I used to work at Mama's, and very loud, you know what I mean, buddy? The Museum of Modern Art in New York City. I was a guard there. You catch the rift. Worked on the graveyard shift. Under those paintings I used to sleep, just like here on this hard street. It was at night, you see, nothing but them and me in the empty museum along about 3 a.m. Rooms full of masterpieces. I used to go to pieces. Sculptures would appear in dim light to my rear. I talked to the paintings, made love to them, you know. Soon left new dots, new lines on Picasso, a few more dots on Seurat. But I fell in love especially with the nudes of Modigliani. I kissed them in all the good places, added pubic hairs, kissed their faces. So now I'm part of the show. My loves will outlast me, I know, though my time is spent on the cold cement. And no one touches me. I share that with them, you see.
Never next way begins. The old will be seen, and your bride will tell. Of endless sense of games, of when we were young. Remember well.
This song has a mic. This song has a mic. This song has a microclimate, local as you like. Local as you like. Lullaby, my battle rhyme. Time I did to pass the time. Sleigh bell on a bike. In between the blank. In between the blank. In between the blanket and the bedding. Is a plank flatter than an unstruck drum, finding equilibrium, humming like a tank.
Waffle Pedro Show. That was A Human Heart by the Franklins. Flagpin. They're brand new from the Garage Dog from Northeast. American Dream. Television with Richard Hell. 1975. Live at CBGB with Poor Circulation. Silver Apples after that. We lost Brother Simeon last month. Velvet Cave. The Emperor's Ice Cream out of Brighton with Fritz. Two Z's. Fritz. If it was Italian, Fritz. Obama's Prendon, Keep the Letters. This is a band in D.C. in the early 80s that only recorded, wouldn't do gigs. Kind of new wave Dan. Someday They'll Come and Grade Me from Charlie Plymouth. Put me red there in Cherry Valley. A guy by Voices, Bunko Man. Bob's working on another record. You know, he played New Year's, 10 months ago. 100 songs. It was like a 5-hour gig downtown, Terragram. And then finally, Thermoneutral. And this is under your own name.
Yeah, yeah.
Franklin Bruno. So, did you do the thing? Well, you already talked about being in the band in school. But high school, were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that earlier?
No, because that was the thing. I don't think I would have been too into marching band because, I mean, jazz band was kind of for the misfits and the people who like responded to that kind of military discipline kind of went to the marching band. But the thing was, if you were a good enough musician, like being in jazz band was your reward. But as a pianist, I couldn't be in the marching band anyway. So I got to be in the jazz band without having to do all of that. So I wasn't like a band kid in that sense. I mean, like I say, I did learn to read a little bit, and I read on piano, but that's not how I approached guitar. I pretty much taught myself guitar from some basic chord voicings. Like I figured out a few things from books and just kind of went from there. But I have much more, I mean, I don't want to overdo it, but I'm a more normal kind of semi-trained
pianist. Well, I get scared
pianist.
Of that word normal. I don't like that word normal.
Well, afraid. Okay, but I mean,
but
like,
look, I'm gonna, can I tell you this?
Yeah.
I've had piano people on the show before, and they told me when they were in the marching band, they did Glockenspiel.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't make me do it. I know that was like the other thing, but fortunately not. Anyway, all I mean is that you can put you can put someone else's music in front of me on piano, and I can play it, but basically, I can't really play guitar with anyone except myself.
Yeah, tell me about guitar. Where did you get your first guitar, Brother Frank?
Well, you know, I think there was an acoustic. Like I said, my dad wrote songs, and for at some point he thought that he was writing country songs. I don't think he really was. But at some point he took some guitar lessons, and there was like a nylon string around our house. And at some point I kind of commandeered it, and I learned a little bit. And then a cousin of mine, who was a pretty good guitarist, he became a dentist. And after he graduated, he like gave me his first guitar, and which was a Fender Music Master, the single coil, like kind of like a Duosonic or a Jaguar, but like kind of a almost like a kid's model. Although I think it was full scale.
Student. Yeah, like a Stang, there was a short neck and a long neck.
Yeah, and I played that for quite a while, and he also gave me like a, these were probably like 63, 64, these instruments, and he gave me a Princeton that I still have and still use.
Amplifier.
And that was my first electric guitar, my only electric for a long time, and it's what I recorded the first couple of Nothing Painted Blue records on mostly, and played live for a long time. But, you know, kind of Stratish, but with not as many, with two pickups.
Well, Fender is a Fender, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What was your first band?
I started playing with people in high school, and it kind of gradually settled. It turned out that me and the drummer were the ones who kind of stuck with it. And we both stayed in the area after high school, and I was a year ahead of him. So I went to the Claremont Colleges, and I wanted to still play, and he was still in high school, and we started playing, and I met a bass player, and that's when we took up the name Nothing Painted Blue, which was really the first real band. And we played, we didn't try to play like in clubs. We just played frat parties. We were not popular because the frat bands, the bands that like kind of made money at parties at when I went to college, were playing like Sweet Home Alabama and Cocaine and things. And we were playing some originals. I'd started to write songs, but we would play like Outdoor Minor and Sweet Jane and maybe some other Velvet, like whatever covers I could figure out. And also, oh, God, we would play Ack, Ack, Ack.
You probably didn't do the Sweet Jane that's on Rock and Roll Animal.
No, like, kind of fast version. pretty basic. I mean, just whatever. I'm not saying we were good. You know, we were getting okay. And eventually, we made a record ourselves, like late 1989, and we played. We played our first show off, not in school. We opened for the Lazy Cowgirls at Al's Bar.
Yeah, Indiana guys, I think.
Are they originally? You know, you know, Pat Todd and
Bob Lee, and the Black Gang drummer, man, he played with them. But tell me about the very first Nothing Painted Blue gig.
Whew, it was probably, so like I said, this was at the Claremont College. Like, we were kind of nominally a collegiate band, but it's a weird school because it doesn't have fraternities in the normal sense. There weren't big frat parties, but there were these rooms that groups could rent out to throw parties, right? So it was probably in one of those rooms, and we probably played just like whatever collection of covers and a few originals, few songs I was writing. I didn't really know where it was going at that point. I mean, I didn't think, oh, I'm gonna make records, or I'm still gonna be doing this in some form in 20 years. I didn't know one way or the other. But I think it was mostly because two things. So, you know, the first show is probably just for a bunch of drunk 19-year-olds, right? And
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think, that, like, I don't know who else would have been
there. Were you scared? Was it a pants shitter?
I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know. I've actually never been, like, super, super scared of performing. I think I'd gotten up and played a couple songs solo at different things. And you know, we played at parties. The high school band is prehistory, but I was playing with the same drummer. So, you know, we'd been playing already for 2 or 3 years together. By the time there was Nothing Painted Blue.
Yeah. That ain't really a cherry gig because you already had broken the water playing with that guy. We're at the end. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're at the end of the first hour. October 16, 2020, Dish Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Franklin Bruno. Hold tight for hour two. October 16, 2020, it's the second hour of the Wap from Pedro Show.
If you're not gonna give it a chance, the packaging's plain, it's just an advance. My unreleased epic, a modern romance. The bio may go in the round file, the photo get lost in a stack, but don't throw my heart on the cell. I'd rather you just send it back. I'm sure that the beat could be faster and fatter. The sentiments are Perry Como's. It was no laughing matter to master this platter, but I don't send out many heart on the cell pile. If you're not gonna give it a spin, you won't get much credit for trading it in. Just think how I'll feel while it rots in the bin. Don't say that I play in the wrong style on the basis of one skipping track. Heart on yourself, I'll just end up buying it back.
on TV, hosting your game shows, giving you things for free. On every commercial, it's my face you see. No matter what channel, I've always wanted to be on your radio, on your late night dial, baby. You'd never tell me no. You tune me in as you lay in your bed. My silky voice, babe, will go straight to your head. There in the flesh, I'd stand on your floor. You'd rush right up to me and give me a kiss. Your love wouldn't be, baby, the thing that I've missed. Honey, I've always wanted to appear in your magazines, your books and fondest dreams. I wish you'd see me in the moon in the sky. Honey, will I keep wishing till the day that I die? Yes, but most of all, babe, I wanna walk through your door right there in the flesh. I'd stand right to me, you give me a kiss. Your love would be better, the thing that I've missed. Yes, and I've always wanted to be on TV, hosting your game shows, giving you things for free. On every commercial, it's my face you see. No matter what channel, honey, it would be me. No matter what channel, honey, it would be me. We'll be right back.
So.
There was only one witness to the crime, but he can't testify in the pantomime. Step into the time machine, so clean and so pure. Come out as a libertine or an entrepreneur. There was one injured party to the claim. Is there blood in the water? Is there skin in the game? Hung up on the branches of some fruitless endeavor. Success may come overnight, but failure takes forever. It's a heart-breaking business. It's a heart-breaking business. The competition's stiff, and if you think you're gonna win, it's a heart-breaking business.
That's a really
Off for Peter show. Started hour two off with Cell Pile from the Human Hearts. Sam Bennett out of Tokyo. He's been there 25 years now. Originally Birmingham. Sun Ra, right? I've always wanted to be on TV. Loose Heart Faith Stellar Groove. That meme always cracks me up. And of course, Magic Moose. Spronton Layer. You know about Spronton Layer?
That's Roger Miller before Burma, right?
This is Roger Miller when he was a bass player in Ann Arbor, and I actually learned about this from the Ashton brothers, because his parents were very... they would have parties, his parents, and have young people over there in Ann Arbor. Like you're right, because Mission to Burma is a Boston band.
Mm-hmm.
The Wonderful Rise. Franklin, and he was, like I said, bass singer, but a composer too. Franklin Bruno with Heartbreaking Business. So, what happened to Nothing Painted Blue?
Well, that was the band that started playing, you know, around LA. And let's see, like I said, well, two things. I mean, I think the reason that we did anything, or that we figured out how to make a record, actually, like, you're indirectly involved, because the guy who explained to us, like, how you put together a two-track tape and put tones on tail and this sort of thing, was Robert Vodica, who had been at KSBC, had been like at the same school as me and been at the radio station, which I was at too. And then he worked as a label manager. I don't know whether he was working for SST or New Alliance formally, but he was there for several years, and he was like a production manager, I guess.
He worked for SST because New Alliance became part of SST.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, like, I was still in touch with him, and he was kind of, like, supportive. Oh, you guys should make a record, whatever. And, you know, we did it ourselves. We started our own label called Jupa Records, which was, like, the drummer, Kyle. I should mention his name, Kyle Brody, still a good friend. His grandfather's nickname was Jupa. And so we called it Jupa Records, and we put out our own thing. But it was basically Robert who showed us, like, introduced us to John Golden. Here's how you get a record mastered. We went to, did this. You go to K-Disc on Sunset after hours, and he'll do a session.
He ended up there. It was across the street from Club Lingerie on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
But he was in the Val before that. I worked with John Golden. He's in Ventura now with his son.
Right. Right. No, we eventually started going out there. I remember that place too, but definitely the first time we ever mastered a record, you know, an attended session, as they say, was actually cutting the disc.
Well, they call it a lacquer.
Yeah. And
do you know about this? Can I ask you if you know about Nat King Cole Trio recording straight to fucking lacquers that were $75 in late 40s money?
Yeah, I think that's Sinatra, you know, these people who they played so much that, it was rare if they had to do a second take.
It was very expensive if you did. And there's no mixing. Yeah. When the trumpet solo comes, the guy moves closer to the mic. I mean, it was incredible. And I learned all this from John Golden and stuff. Great, great cats. Love that.
Yeah, no, he has great. He's great.
You know, New Alliance, when I first worked with John Golden, that's when me and D Boone and Mark Tamburovich. But by the time you're working with Robert Vodica, it's part of SST because I can't
D Boone. Yeah, he helped a lot. But then, I don't know, compressing like a few years into a few sentences. We kept recording some stuff. Our bass player in college left. We found a new guy who also worked at SST, Joey Burns, who was in Giant Sand at the time and went on to start Calexico. And we did like a couple records with him.
Joey's from up the hill, PV. He lives in Zona now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for a long time. But he was from Palos Verdes. He went to Irvine.
I got to hold you off here a little bit. I want to play Adultery, Extra Lands.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. There's a mean streak in the sky. The morning when you come by and you ask me would I, and I say I would, and it's a little ring that does nobody good. I should have known that you'd come my way by the dog sprawled up sleeping on the driveway, windows open around the neighborhood. It's an ill wind that does nobody good. And you touch my hand and the sun bleeds down. Ineffective warnings all over the ground, and I'm standing on the same spot where your husband stood. It's an ill wind that does nobody good.
Hovers over us. A sense of disappointment. A broken promise we were given as children. I am referring not to the standard false promises that children are always given about how the world is fair or how those who work hard shall be rewarded, but to a particular generational promise given to those who were children in the 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s. One that was never quite articulated as a promise, but rather as a set of assumptions about what our adult world was supposed to be like. And since it was never quite promised, now that it has failed to come true, we're left confused. Indignant, but at the same time, embarrassed at our own indignation. Ashamed we were ever so silly to believe our elders to begin with. Where, in short, are the flying cars?
Twice.
Watt for Pedro Show, Adultery from Extra Lands, Saito Koji, Touch, Deerhoof, Love Lore 4, they're recording like crazy during this quick quarantino mode, Amulets, Drift Mirror, Bullets or Balloons from Spokanistan, Mr. Ribs, and finally, Calexico, this is one reason. A good Sugui with the Joey Burns thing here. Jenny Toome, mm-hmm. Your Inarticulate Boyfriend. Yeah, they do a great version of Corona, D. Boone's song.
Yeah, I know. I know. Joey is, he was definitely a better all-around musician. I mean, a more experienced musician when he started playing with us, and I think it helped get us together. But our deal with at that point was we made some more recordings in California, and that got us, I don't know if signed is the word, but we made a record for Coco Pop, which was a short-lived side label of Shimmy Disc. And our first time on the East Coast, our first national tour was we drove out to Noyes, New Jersey. Kramer was in Jersey at that point and made a record with him in like 5 days. And we were playing the songs every night on the way out there. So, you know, it was like tight and basically almost a live record with a few overdubs. And that label, that record, you know, kind of like was our calling card to be able to tour and play with people. But we spent most of our time in California. And then after that, I don't even know how, but we ended up on Scat Records. We were label mates with Pollard and Guided by Voices for a while. We made a couple of records with them. I don't think we ever played. I played with them solo. I opened for Guided by Voices solo a couple times, but I don't think the band ever did. So Nothing Painted Blue, and we eventually, Joey got like more busy with Giant Sand and then Calexico and did his own thing. So we found another bass player, a guy named Peter Hughes, who is now in the Mountain Goats. And then we played together, sometimes with a second guitarist, sometimes as a trio, for, you know, like probably to the end of the decade. In the 90s, I would say was our run.
What's this Extra Lands?
The Extra Lens is actually me and John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats. And most of it he's another guy from our area, from the Claremont Upland area, or Claremont really. And I didn't meet him till after college. But he was just,
what do people say there? Does anybody make jokes about Claremont, Montclair? I mean, it's a fucking,
well, it is weird. I never understood it, why there's two towns right next to each other.
They're not identically kind of towns. One is one way and one's another way, right?
Well, I mean, it's funny because they're adjacent. Claremont is where the colleges are, so it has a little bit around that area, a little bit of a different, but it also has a big retirement community. Montclair, I don't even know why it became a separate township. It's like the town I'm actually from, Upland, used to be part of Ontario, which is just a little bit to the south. And at one point, it was just called North Ontario. And then at some point, you know,
I saw the California Jam for $6.50.
Uh-huh.
I took the bus from Pedro for $2. People were getting towed on the freeway, right? 10,000 cars were parked on the freeway.
Was that Cal Jam or Cal Jam 2? Because I remember radio ads for Cal Jam 2.
I'm a little less younger than you, Brother Frank.
Yeah, I know.
So $6.50? 1974, yeah, I was 16 years old. It was Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Black Sabbath, Black Oak, Arkansas, Deep Purple with the Low Singer, Earth, Wind, and Fire, they were great. Seals and Croft, they're terrible.
Rare Earth. Was that it?
They're the only band to get a fucking encore, though, and Rare Earth started it all off. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. October 14th. No, it ain't. October's, yeah, 2020. Sorry about that. I'm blowing clams always, Brother Frank.
It's all right.
Hold tight for hour three. October 14th, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Thank you. When dress yourself, control yourself, contort yourself a thousand ways. Guard yourself, respect yourself, reject yourself, connect and disconnect yourself, and carefully dissect yourself for clinical display. Tap well and call the clientele. I'm giving it away, I'm giving it away. Scale and show, I swore I'd never sell. I'm giving it away, I'm giving it. She didn't share my politics. She wore her hair like Stevie Nicks. Her smile as fair as Rosamund. Her car declined for lack of funds. Her uncle robbed a bank because he said that's where the money was. But honest is as honest does. So who am I to say? Shale, shell, I swore I wouldn't sell. I'm giving it away, I'm giving it. It's the golden collar for the runners-up, but everybody still competes to get those asses in the seats. Now I don't need a ton of bricks to fall on me, just five or six to know my house is made of sticks while yours is made of hay. So tap well and call the clientele. I'm giving it away, I'm giving it away. I'm giving it, I'm giving it, I'm giving it away.
Well, for Pedro Show, we start off the third hour with Nick Cave, the song by the Human Hearts. Crane after that, Beautiful Thing. Pikachu with Makoto. Cairo, the instrumental version. Blue Coop, which has got the bass man from Alice Cooper. And then the drummer and bass man from Blue Oyster Cult. Blue Coop. Huh? Angel's Well. I think Albert just put out a new record. And Joe did a few months ago. He was on the show. Big Heroes. Me and D-Boom were younger. Finally, giving it away, Human Hearts. Tell me about Human Hearts. How'd that happen?
Nothing Pain and Blues stayed together in some form, and we kept playing. But I went to graduate school, and I moved into LA, and I was at UCLA for a few years, and I was still doing stuff, and I was also making solo records, and sometimes the band would play. Anyway, once I got out, I got a couple jobs, like the way that kind of academia works, like you get a job where you can. So I got a year teaching job in Chicago. So that was when, like, the first time I really lived outside of California. It was also the first time I lived with my girlfriend, now wife. Like, that was a big step. She came out with me. Anyway, I was in Chicago for a year. I knew Nothing Painted Blue wasn't really a thing anymore. I make stuff under my own name. I'll just call it Franklin Bruno if it's really solo, but I don't like it that much because I don't like people thinking, oh, this is going to be James Taylor. This is going to be singer-songwriter. So I wanted another name. I didn't know how much of a band it was going to be, but I made one record with people who were in Chicago, some of the people from the Cocktails, that year that I was in Chicago. And then after that, I got another job in upstate New York. And there, I already knew more people because we had toured a bunch, and I found a different drummer there, a guy named Matt Hauser. And I would say the core of the Human Hearts is really me and Matt. My longest relationships have always been with drummers for whatever reason. And we played with different people. There have been a couple of bass players. There's a guitarist named Pete Gallup. And we've made one more record, and we finished a record. Some of the stuff that you played, that song you played earlier, Still in Error, and some of the stuff from the new EP, that's from a new record that we made with Mitch Easter in North Carolina, that we'll see when I can put out the whole thing. But basically, The Human Hearts is me and whoever I'm playing with in New York, but it's gradually gotten to be more of a stable band than I originally thought it was when I picked the name.
You know about the fall, right?
Me and your granny playing spoons?
Well, I heard it was bongos.
Oh, bongos? Yeah. But same principle.
Marky exactly. Said that the fall was anything, right?
Yeah.
As long as he's involved.
If he's there. Yeah, and this is a little like that. But, you know, I do like, I've heard you talking about, like, the difference between a band and a project or a proj, right? So the extra lens.
Well, that was my guess saying that. To me, yeah. It's not a big difference.
Yeah, me and John Darnielle, when we do an extra lens or Glenn's thing, that's a project because we have our own main things and we occasionally come together and it's like, okay, this is the length of time that this is going to take. But Nothing Painted Blue, totally a band. Human Hearts, somewhere in between. Like if I used a different rhythm section, I might still call it the Human Hearts, but I feel like the band has a character and a book and, you know, like, if I did something completely different, I wouldn't call, like if I started writing, you know, soundtrack music or something or an ambient record, I don't think I'd call it the Human Hearts just cause it's me.
You know, made a big deal out of that was Ian MacKay.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, Kariki is a band and Egg Hunt was a proj. Now I want to play Plot of a Romance.
Of a romance starts when boy meets girl, then they take such a small chance, give young love the world. Popped on movies and TV, all day, that's how it should be, and I thought you knew. We met cute on the landing, fair maid, art and swain, with a barbed at misunderstanding, can't let you board that plane. Real runs out like a shot clock, soundtrack, smoke up our lips block. And I thought you knew. Stack, you went back on your word. Got a gun on stage in the first act. Would go off in the sun. So straight down, we stop one. Still they sell us popcorn.
time. They carve it on the monument and they stamp it on the dime. Then they turn around and tell you that your union is a crime. But if they're free to hire us, free to fire us, free to profit from their lies, then we're free, my brother, to help each other. Yeah, we're free to organize. We're free, 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 free. Yeah, we're free to unionize. Sometimes it seems like freedom is the only word they use. It echoes in the Capitol and it crawls beneath the news. And they say the choice is yours until they don't like what you choose. But if they're free to hire us, free to fire us, free to profit from their lies, then we're free, my neighbor, to pool our labor. Yes, we're free to organize. Yeah, we're free, 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 free. Yeah, we're free to unionize. They say they're job creators, but they haven't made enough for the nurses, clerks, and waiters, and the kids who have it tough. And they try to call us traitors every time we call their bluff. And they're free to hire us, free to fire us, free to profit from their lies. If they want a showdown, we'll call a slowdown, 'cause we're free to organize. We're free, 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 free. Yeah, we're free to unionize. This land was built on liberty. I don't know if that's true, but if companies are people now, what becomes of me and you? We'll have to stand together like the corporations do. And they're free to hire us, free to fire us, free to profit from their lies. If they try to lock out, we'll stage a walkout, 'cause we're free to organize. We're free, 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 free. Yeah, we're free to unionize. We're free, 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 free. Yeah, we're free to unionize.
Last music for this edition. Human Hearts led it off, the plot of a romance. A Lois Screwdriver, the surf guys from East Bay that were on last month. The Deadline, the Ridiculous Trio. These are cats from Chicago that do Stooges with sax, tuba, and drums. Kind of trippy power trio. TVI, best song. One chord. People say three chords. Fuck it. Harry Nilsson, Lime in the Coconut, C7. Yeah, you don't sometimes need another chord. Galactici, Heaven Channel, Season 2, LP 8, Part 1. These are the Raquel and Jared out in Joshua Tree during this quarantino mode. 18 albums. So nobody be sitting on their hands, right? Stuff to do. King Lear was written in a lockdown. Free to Organize, Franklin Bruno, for the final piece. And this one, I guess, it's Man Alone, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know why it's kind of a, I don't know, you want to call it a protest song? Fine, right? I mean, a propaganda song, if you like. It was kind of thinking about the courts and the the different laws that get made against, you know, to keep, labor actions from spreading and what have you. And I just decided to write it in the style and play it in the style of like a Pete Seeger.
You know who lived here a couple years was Joe Hill with his brother around 1912.
High in the Sky.
The Little Red Songbook. In fact, we had a Wobbly Hall here that got marched on by the Klan. If you can believe it, we had IWW and KKK in Pedro.
I can believe it.
No, because people have this caricature of California, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there were, there were...
Upton Sinclair was arrested here for read the Bill of Rights. On what we call Liberty Hill. There's a plaque there now.
There were, if not lynchings, like, African-Americans getting sort of firebombed out of their homes out in Fontana also, which is closer to where I am. There's sort of a sort of infamous incident of that. But, yeah, there's certainly a dark side to the California dream in all those respects.
Yeah, I worked for an old lawyer. He said him and his buddies were at the board with guns keeping the Okies out.
Mm-hmm.
the Great Sarath stuff.
Yeah, and, well, that's what Do Re Mi is about, right?
Right. Fontana, right. Somebody gave me a bumper sticker at a gig. It said, water. Whites are the endangered race in Fontana. Now, there's probably a lot of cool people in Fontana, so I don't want to paint it with a weird brush. But the point was, I think there's dickheads everywhere.
That's true, too.
Yeah. So where can where can people find you on the internet, Brother Frank?
I keep franklinbruno.com going. There's a few things there, and the Human Hearts are on Twitter. I think we played one song. I don't even know if we played a song from the EP. I put out an EP of some stuff that's going to be on the next one.
If people go to franklinbruno.com, they could go to all the mother telephone
calls. Yeah, everything else will be there. And
what's your next?
Easy to find.
What's your next plan?
These times make it a little weird. I've lived in New York for about 10 years, and I do Human Heart stuff, but I also have been playing piano again more with other people, my friend Laura Cantrell, a great country singer songwriter who plays with great people, and we were doing a lot of shows up to this point. So I hope that all starts up again. I want to get this record is mixed but not mastered, and I want to either put it out myself or find someone, and then maybe probably my friends at Shrimper in the Inland Empire. I still do stuff with them. And then just see, I'm not really Mr. Home Recording anymore, but I may have to start doing more of that, as this goes on. Cause I'd like to, I have some other songs written and I'd like to do them, but it's a little up in the air. I gotta be honest.
Okay. Big honor for me to have you on the show. Just keep on keeping on. We get dealt a hand. We got to play it the best we can, Brother Frank.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for being on. When you do get new stuff, will you come back on the show and we can talk about it?
Happy to.
Okay. People, it's been the October 16, 2020 edition of the... No, it ain't. October 14, 2020. Keep your powder dry.